Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Secure Insights with NDK Cyber. This week I'm joined by Harry Thomas. Harry is somebody who's been in the world of OT security for the last 10 years or so, probably before we were calling it OT security. Started out on the red team side, moved more blue team and consultancy and advisory, now with a company called Vertorio. Now, in this conversation, we bounce around a few different areas here, and we provide some real actionable points on how to secure OT systems from a very sort of short-term win perspective, right through to your longer-term wins and goals as well, and that ever-growing journey that that you'll be on in this environment. We talk about getting buy-in, we talk about challenges you might face with budget, what you could do, you know, with a more limited scope as well. So really hope you enjoy this one, and open to feedback as always.
Harry, thank you very much for taking the time. I know you're a busy guy. Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for the invite.
Not at all. So the listeners would have heard a brief introduction from myself there, but in your own words, do you want to give us a brief overview of your background and what you tend to do on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, so I've been in OT cybersecurity for just a little over a decade. I started in offensive cybersecurity, so like a penetration tester or an ethical hacker, red team, whatever flavor of nomenclature you want to utilize. Progressed my way through to working with OT security vendor startups. Worked at Security Matters, Dragos, did a little stint at AWS Security, where I fell in love with machine learning and AI. And then now I work as an OT advisor at Vertorio.
Awesome. Okay, cool. So 10 years in OT security. So it's been in the limelight recently, as we've seen from a lot of the media and things like that. But 10 years ago, OT security, correct me if I'm wrong, but where I'm standing, wasn't as much of a talking point.
That's correct. Depending on who you talk to, there was a lot of people doing OT cybersecurity before it was even called OT security. But from my standpoint, when I joined into this industry, it was a lot different. We didn't have visibility of our assets. We didn't understand the reason why we needed to implement a defensible architecture. But nowadays, it seems to be, well, it is actually more of a talking point amongst executives all the way down to engineers, trying to figure out how to, you know, secure the systems that give us running water and, you know, flowing electricity.
Yes, indeed. And is that partly due to the breaches in the media, maybe Colonial Pipeline, I know it gets brought up a lot, but other things as well, regulation, or just a growing awareness, maybe, I don't know. What's your take on that?
I think it was all of the above. I believe that Colonial Pipeline really did, unfortunately, kind of light a fire underneath everybody. Colonial Pipeline wasn't a direct attack on the industrial control systems itself. It was just an ancillary attack that somehow, if I recall correctly, affected the business system that allowed Colonial Pipeline to bill their customers. So inadvertently shut down the pipeline. But after that and growing ransomware, we're looking at, I think Dragos put out a report a little bit ago, every quarter it's doubling or maybe even more, to be honest. I believe by like mid Q2 of this year, it was already the same number of ransomware attacks as all of last year, according to their reports, if I recall correctly. I read a lot, so but it's just there's that. The in the United States, the White House put out a little bit of a briefing and such, and they put out their cybersecurity plan for 2024 to bolster critical infrastructure within the United States. You have regulations like NERC-CIP. Even they're trying to figure out a way to help accelerate the adoption of cloud within electric utilities. So it's just a culmination of many factors that is somehow bringing, you know, this to awareness. And then most recently, there was the Iranian attacks, nation state attacks against PLCs, program logical controllers, for anybody who's unaware of what that acronym is. And, you know, that was water facilities on US soil. So there's a lot of things going on. And then especially in Europe too, I mean, there was a distributed denial of service performed utilizing firewalls of the Denmark power grid. So, I mean, you're just looking at before the attacks were so infrequent, right? They were so infrequent that you're like, why are we, spending money on vendors, technologies, people, processes to keep the lights on if we're not seeing attacks that often? And I found that the organizations now that are most mature understood the impact of what an attack like that could do to their environment, to their network, or to the customers that they serve.
Indeed, indeed. I heard somebody describe it as it's why do you wear a seatbelt in the car? You're going to wear a seatbelt.
Exactly.
You're not in a car crash every day, not at all. Well, hopefully, anyway. Touch wood. But when you do, you want
Right.
it there as a as a safety mechanism. So I was going to ask you sort of around the in your view that the general state of OT security at the moment. If you had to sort of summarize that, and I know you've touched on a few points there, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What's the sort of the state of play in your point of view of OT security in the US? Let's start there.
Yeah, I'm finding, so we're talking, we spoke about the awareness, right? That it's now starting to be, operational technology, industrial control systems is moving its way towards a household acronym, right? Everybody's talking about industrial cybersecurity. I mean, even my family's talking about it and they're asking me questions. But if you're looking at the state of OT cybersecurity as far as breaking it down within an organization, power utility, oil and gas company, midstream, upstream. I find that we're still fragmented. We're still siloed, right? So you have your OT cybersecurity personnel trying to ensure the network and assets are protected in the operational technology environment. You have your IT security personnel who are just told by their executive that they need to assist the OT security. You have your operational engineers, the people that manage and run the assets, like your relays, anything within power generation. They're responsible for making sure those assets are up and running and available. And then you have your executives who have a different point of view of not necessarily how things should be ran, but what they're most concerned about, right? And you have these four separate silos and they're fragmented. They're talking past each other. They're talking at least, but they're talking past each other. They're all saying kind of the same thing or having the same sentiment, right? We want to keep the lights up. We want to keep the water flowing. But without clear accountability, somebody needs to step up and say, you need to do this, you need to do that. And then there needs to be collaboration across the organization.
And so, with that in mind, then, with all of this fragmentation, a lot of people talk about us having this problem, and we've seen that. I've spoken to heads of IT security or CISO, and there's maybe a role advertised, and they said, "Look, speak to the OT guys. There's nothing to do with me." And it's an OT security role. So where does that come from? Is that like a cultural thing? Is that just inherent from the past, where it's we're the people in the office, you're the people on the plant floor, we'll talk to each other if we have to, maybe the Christmas party once a year, but outside of that, where's that sort of
Yeah,
thing?
it definitely has a little bit of a legacy mindset associated with it. You have traditionally the IT professionals had nothing to do with anything in the plant. They're like, if you need a networking gear, like we'll purchase something for you, right? We'll expense it, but yeah, and install it, but that's pretty much it. And they always, not always, but most of the time they purchase the gear that would just stay up and running and not necessarily try to configure it appropriately, add virtual LANs or implement firewalls and firewall rules that protected the environment. So what you're seeing right now is suddenly your executives, your CEO in particular, is probably getting pressured from the board of directors stating that, hey, what are you doing for OT cybersecurity? And now you're pressuring the CISO, the chief information security officer. And they're asking, their individuals within IT, because that's the normal group that they manage. And then now you're almost passing the buck a little bit, right? All the way down to somebody who's going to talk to somebody within either OT cybersecurity or somebody within the plants, right? Sometimes there isn't even an OT cybersecurity professional. Sometimes it's just the plant engineer, the process control engineer who knows a little bit about networking. They're the ones you're talking to. But we need to find somebody who kind of owns all that risk. And depending on who you talk to, they might say, well, the VP of operations should own that risk, process control operations. And then other people are like, well, the chief information security officer should own the risk. Or you should have a VP of IT and a VP of OT cybersecurity. And the VP of OT cybersecurity should own the risk and, boil it all up to the chief information security officer. Because to be honest, like when you're working with just information technology networks in, let's say, a power utility, that is half, maybe a quarter of the whole organization that you're managing. Albeit the wild, wild west most of the time, as far as anybody can browse the internet for anything, but it's probably about a third or a quarter of the overall environment. But once you add the OT network to it, they might have less net, less assets. But I find that the IT personnel who take over the OT cybersecurity duties are putting in double the work to try and not only understand process control, but understand how to secure these assets without taking down the network.
Yeah, I think just touching on that is that there definitely seems to be, from who I've spoken to, a real difference in that cultural piece of you can't secure these things the same way. You can't. There's no Patch Tuesday. It's not like that. If it comes down, we might have 3 hours a year. We've got a chance to do all our upgrades and implementations. Yeah, we can't just do that like you can. So, I guess what I'm asking here is, if you've got these fragmented divisions, we've all got the same goal, surely. A CEO, if a cyber breach happens, plant goes down for a weekend, millions lost. You can get insurance on that, but can you really? I don't really know. So where's the, I guess, where have you seen a successful fix for that fragmentation or breaking down the walls, maybe, or the convergence, a lot of people calling it convergence between IT and OT? How do you sort of go about doing that, or at least taking a step towards making everybody work together?
Yeah, so let's take a step back. The IT-OT convergence, the point of that wasn't about personnel, it was about technology. That's already there. IT-OT, I mean, they're interacting, all the time, as far as the technology is concerned. But as far as the personnel, unsure. Where have I seen something like this successful, or what traits have I seen? Is when you have executive buy-in. Particularly, not just the board, but the CEO and everybody else, C level or VP level, are bought into saying, yes, this is something we need to do, right? This is an initiative that we need to take in order to ensure that everything stays up and running. Much like in IT, where you do your IT security awareness. And they're like, cybersecurity is everybody, right? Everybody's responsible for this. It's this, I find it's the same thing with OT cybersecurity. Everybody's responsible. But what it comes down to, I find, is a lack of knowledge of what the other person has to deal with. So as me, as we'll say a network security professional, right? I'm in this organization and I don't understand. You, the process engineer, maybe you're the power engineer, power energy engineer, where you're like, well, I need to keep this Emerson Delta V network up all the time. Like, I can't do anything. And I'm coming to you saying, well, you're asking for, let's say, this firewall rule. And I don't know what it needs to do, but if you open it, it is bad for the organization. Well, now you're competing. You're not really understanding the reason why, because the engineer, power engineer, was like, I just need it for Emerson Delta V environment. And the network engineer is like, well, I can't open this on the Palo Alto firewall. And you're like, speaking way past each other, not understanding that maybe Emerson needs to remote into their environment, into the process environment, in order to perform maintenance updates, something along the lines of that. And it's just way more cost effective to do it remotely. Well, now me as a network engineer, I'm stopping that. And I might come to you a little bit later, say, hey, the vulnerability team says you have a whole bunch of vulnerabilities in your Delta V environment. The process engineer might go, well, if you opened up that firewall, we would have gotten an update to the Emerson environment and that wouldn't have been there.
So how do we get that to happen then? So if that's a problem that they're talking past each other, who's the sort of, I guess, the, I don't, for want of a better phrase, who's the parent in that situation that sort of splits up the guys and goes, right, stop fighting. You know, we need to work this through together. Is that where the exec buy-in piece comes in?
I think the exec buy-in piece comes in as a final stop to any decision-making, right? Okay. You go to the least of, you know, who manages who, find that final person, and that final person makes the decision. But the parent of the situation is generally the person that knows the most between industrial operations and cybersecurity, who can translate in each other's vernacular, saying, hey, you know, this networking guy is saying XYZ, and I just want to understand, you know, your side. I know you have to do this, but, you know, what's the reasoning for it? And then they tell you about the contract, service level agreements, and all this. And you're like, oh, now I understand completely. And you can bring it back to the other side and say, hey, you know, the reason for this and justification is this. And, you know, we can maybe make it temporary. It doesn't need to be, you know, permanent. So it's really the person, the parent is the person who understands both sides and can speak their language.
Understood. Okay. And so, but there must be, you know, environments out there that haven't reached that like aha moment yet of, oh, we need to do this. So is that like, do organizations in what you see, do they bring in outside help to do that? Is that somebody in the business that could typically fall into that role?
Sometimes it's outside help. Sometimes they'll hire a consultant to come in and just kind of a third party is always nice to level set with everybody. Like aside from doing this work and making sure or trying to make sure that you guys are, you know, protected from a cybersecurity perspective, I have no, you know, bet in this game. But they have to train within. So if you look at, you know, we see or we say there's not enough cybersecurity personnel for the cybersecurity jobs we have.
Sure.
And that's a niche within overall IT. Now we hone that in a little bit more to OT cybersecurity, and we definitely don't have enough personnel. I mean, most of the time, we don't even have enough new grad engineers to replace the engineers in electric utility that are about to retire in a few years.
Sure.
So there's just a shortage of these individuals that can take the place. So it's really hard to find somebody to come in and speak the language of both sides. Most of the time, if I have to say, you know, who takes over, it's probably like the network engineer or the network manager, maybe, who is interacting with both sides constantly, just to keep the network up and available. And they're the ones that just through, I guess, osmosis starts to understand how the OT side of the house operates.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Just from speaking from personal experience, it tends to be a lot of conversations we've had with those sorts of professionals. They tend to have been at the company a fairly long time, and I guess have that trust and buy-in and engagement from engineer through to exec leadership level. And just on that, we tend to speak to a lot of people that are in that position. They are titled the network engineer or similar on the OT side, and they have a GIAC certification, which is, you know, GIAC don't give out certifications willy-nilly to anybody. And so they're clearly skilled enough in the security side. And you speak to them and you have that conversation on the lines of, so who does your OT security? Oh, that's me. But you're also doing all these other jobs as well. So it's like another point added on the job description at the bottom. And you touching on what we've already spoken about a bit, but it's sort of, they didn't really have the budget for somebody else, so they sort of gave it to me, and that's just how it's been. And that doesn't happen, I know, in the more mature environments, but in those that maybe are less regulated or have less of a budget for this, maybe, is that something you see as well?
So in the US, we have investor-owned utilities like your Southern Company, Sempra Energy, National Grid, all the way down to like your cooperatives, municipalities. What generally people forget about the budget is that the buck is passed to the customers. So if me, as the head of this cooperative, wants to purchase this new technology for $1 million over the course of, spread out over the course of 4 years, I then need to somehow create that in the budget, create that in my revenue by tacking on something or increasing rates for my customers. And that's very difficult to really do. So that's why you hear a lot of people say, well, I just wear multiple hats and that's just what I do. Because that budget is sometimes not available and will not be available in the short term because it involves, James, you increasing rates for your neighbor. And you really like your neighbor. You guys go and have a barbecue, in the summer, every other weekend. The moment you increase the rates, he's going to come to you and say, "Hey, James, what's up? Why is this happening?"
Yes, I see. But then the risk there, I guess, is that if there is a cyber breach or a data breach, cyber attack, there's less resource to help prevent that or re respond to it in the first place.
Yeah, it's a really chicken and the egg situation. You want to build an environment and defensible architecture, I keep saying that, where you have enough resources in order to either identify the threat or stop the threat and respond and recover. But that's really hard to do when you're trying to, when you just don't have the budget to do it. And I'm not saying that budget is necessary for just technology. Budget is necessary for investing the time into processes or people. Right, being able to send maybe the person who's wearing multiple hats to a SANS training so that they actually understand what they're doing rather than reading it through blog posts and going and attending webinars.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I guess just for that person that is listening now that may be in a similar situation or is the one man band, maybe they're called OT security architect, manager, head of something like that, but they're the only person they're not they've got not got a huge amount of buy-in. Is there like a top list of things you would do to maybe assess the risk of their OT security environment from day one through to 1 to 90 days, how to assess an OT security, an OT environment for cybersecurity. You've not got a whole bunch of buy-in. You're the one OT security person there. 90 days or the low-hanging fruit. What would you tackle first to get that secure environment?
Yeah, certainly. So if you're the head or owning all of the OT cybersecurity risk of your organization, I suggest you do a few things. A lot of my suggestions will be corresponding to, the fact that maybe you don't have enough budget to go out and get a consultant to do it or purchase the technology to assess your own risk. My first suggestion is building out a matrix, utilizing your favorite flavor of cybersecurity framework. The one I like the most is the NIST cybersecurity framework, just because it's applicable to almost all industries, if not all industries. So you have your identify, detect, protect, so on and so forth. Take a snapshot or understand all your security controls or vendors, compensating controls that you have in place and put them inside your matrix and really identify where your gaps are. You might have stuff to protect. You might have firewalls in place, maybe firewalls in place in multiple levels where you're creating that segmentation. But if you don't have anything to detect a threat that gets by there, that's a gap. afterwards, you want to be able to figure out your perimeter, the perimeter of the OT cyber, the OT network. So that perimeter are those firewalls. So if you have a lack of firewalls, AKA, maybe you don't have enough, maybe you only have one firewall between the IT OT network. Well, you want to analyze those firewall rules, make sure that everything is the way it's supposed to be. There are some cost-effective solutions out there to do that if you don't want to, read firewall configurations.
Okay, cool.
And then you want to kind of build a plan, right? All right, so I have this one firewall. And it's protecting, let's say, four networks. How do I then figure out a way to segment that? You can try to do a proof of concept, a proof of value with a cybersecurity company vendor, maybe implement something to detect if that is more cost effective than implementing more firewalls. But I suggest building this tier layer. I keep going back to defensible architecture, where the goal is to stop, slow down, or detect a threat. The more layers you put, and let me tell you, as an ex, red teamer, the more layers you put, the more frustrated I definitely get because it's hard for me to get to my goal because I'm flying in blind. There's an old adage that I don't know if you've heard where the defenders always say, well, the attacker only needs to get the answer right once. They only need to find one vulnerability or one password that works. But what they don't understand sometimes is once they're in the network, once the attacker is in the network, they have to be perfect.
Okay.
They can't be making mistakes because if they make a mistake and they don't understand the entirety of your environment that you understand, it could be very easy to identify them and stop them and contain them at least. So our goal as defenders is to make it as hard as possible for them to go within the network because they're going to end up making a mistake and then we can capitalize on that.
Understood. So it's not like a what you might see in the film sometimes, the password's cracked and then you're into the whole system and you're just freely moving around. It's there's layers to it.
Yeah, right. You're not a hack. I just activated spell check and then all of a sudden I own the whole network. It's not that whatsoever. Some networks are like that. Some environments are. But you also kind of forget that, like, when you get a consulting engagement or when you do a risk analysis, unless it's a continuous risk analysis, unless it's a continuous engagement over and over again, it's all a spot in time. It's all right now, this is what it is. And your risk could change, day after day, week after week. So unless you're continuously trying to identify this risk, mind you, this is beyond the just, identifying your security controls. This is actually identifying a possible vendor or consulting firm to assist you with your journey. But unless you're working on that continuous risk assessment, it's really, really hard to understand kind of where you sit. Because you get a report and you're like, wow, this is a report. This is all I need to do. I just need to do these 56 things, done. And you're like, no, that's not it. That's 56 things that we identified today. And it was a scoped down consulting engagement to only this one site and within this one site, within one network.
So you've got to continuously do that. So th this might play into my next question, but I was hearing you talk then, and defensible architecture is the end goal and we're always working towards. Outside in, it seems to be like a never-ending journey, but in a good way. It's not like a sort of forever uphill battle, but it's continuous, it's evolving, it's developing as threats evolve and develop, I guess.
Yeah, it does. I mean, so all right. So just take in air quotes recent release of AI, ChatGPT, Google just released Gemini. I think it was like in beta or maybe pre-beta, something along the lines of that. I know it's not generally available because I tried looking for it. Technology changes so quickly. If we were doing this podcast a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, I'd say like, go out and identify these, three technologies, implement them, and you'll be fine. But now, no. You have AI that can be trained to help you create phishing emails, to help you write a script that you can embed in an Excel file and have somebody double click on that, and all of a sudden you're on somebody's computer. So defensible architecture is ever growing. And all we're trying to do, and all I'm trying to do, is boil it down. We're not trying to boil the ocean. And that's why I suggest that NIST cybersecurity framework, where you can look at all your pillars and figure out, yes, this is what I can do to bolster my defenses and start heading towards that golden defensible architecture. But I know we're it's a journey, right? It's not, there's no just end. It's going to be a journey. We've identified that in IT cybersecurity. We know that it's a journey in that. It's going to be a journey in OT.
Yeah, absolutely. So what might be golden today will be not so much tomorrow. And so on that journey towards defensible architecture, is there any like sort of common snags you tend to see people running into a lot along that, or maybe sort of things they could identify early on that will save them a lot of time, resource, money down the line?
The number one thing, all right, actually, I have two things. I have two things that
Let's do it.
industrial organizations should work on. One is identifying your cybersecurity strategy, right? Not like what we need to implement right now, just like your overarching goal. You need to know where you're at, and you need to know what you need to do to make that golden architecture, that golden site. But that's like a It's like you build that strategy over the course of a year. You can get a consultant to come in and help you with the bare minimum and the bare bones, I mean, where it's like, all right, this is what you need to come up with. We can have these workshops, discuss this, and really understand like this one site, what can we do to make it better? And then we can replicate that across your other sites. The other thing that I suggest, that is probably before creating that cybersecurity strategy, is understanding your segmentation. Understanding your segmentation, understanding your external footprint, because there are sometimes like the water facility pack where the PLCs were just available on the internet. You can utilize Shodan. That's a tool that you can just publicly search, for PLCs. You can search for like SSL or TLS certificates if it matches a certain organization name, so on and so forth. So you, as the organization, it might take you some time to really understand how to do the Shodan queries, but you can also ask a consulting firm to do it for you. But you should really understand what is your attack surface on your outside as well. But let's say that gets breached. We need to create those layers. Because when we create those layers and all of a sudden they get to the process control layer or just before then, an attacker, I mean, and they can't do anything because it only allows outbound communication and I can't send in a specially crafted packet to shut down your relay. All right, well, now I have to figure out what my maybe plan B or my plan C is as an attacker. So if you think about that in mind, scenario-based type of risk analysis, scenario-based protection, identify your crown jewels, figure out your impact, and then how to compensate for that. If it's going manual is a perfect compensating control. But in case of needing technologies, identify the technologies you need as a compensating control, in order to prevent such an impact.
As early as possible, yeah. Which I can see in some organizations from people we've spoken to of being there's a lot of legacy tech. No one's really done this before. This is the first journey we're on. So it's I know we've sort of given a high level overview here, but it won't be as simple as like a day's task to do that, obviously. It's much more involved than that. But I think that gives some real actionable points on, okay, here's where you would start off the bare bones. This is what we need to get in place, first of all. And we've touched on it earlier on in this call a little bit, but with that program there, building that defensible architecture, who should ultimately own that? And that might vary depending on industry to industry or size or regulated or not. I don't know. But where have you seen success?
Success isn't having a sole person own something. There should be a sole person accountable for, let's say, the cybersecurity not being up to snuff or something along the lines of that. But one person accountable or one person responsible for all of it won't won't work. It takes collaboration. Back to the beginning of the podcast, we're talking about collaboration. You need input from everybody because you, as the sole owner, won't know everything. So you need to bring the relevant stakeholders together, understand what everybody's trying to say, and then start creating your plan. And by the way, the plan, the strategy, it, although you can, like I said, get a consultant to shortcut and maybe give you the bare bones, it's going to take time. So as it takes time, you need to be doing your matrix. You need to be doing all, your segmentation, all this other stuff, figuring out the budget for maybe next year or the year after. There's a lot of moving parts that needs to be moving all together in parallel towards the goal, whatever the goal is. But it's going to be a long journey, and it's going to be difficult in some days, but it's just a necessary evil, I think.
Indeed, indeed. And I think, from outside in, it's there's more light being shone on the space now. There's clearly more awareness growing that the vendors are catching on. And 10 years ago, we had no requirements from a recruitment standpoint for an OT security specific role. And as time's gone on, it's been cybersecurity engineer with some OT security would be fantastic. And then now we're seeing a big rise in OT security specific roles. So I think that's a really encouraging sign. So, over the next sort of 2 or 3 years, I think hopefully, though, those snags you were talking about there, and then the rough rides will become a little bit easier as there's more people and more budget and buy-in and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I like to think of OT cybersecurity like how, I don't know, maybe IT security was 10, 15 years ago, right? Or what IT security was when the cloud was first released. We had no idea what to do. And we're just evolving. We're developing our skill set as more types of training comes out. You can even free training, or blog posts. I just suggest really try to dive deep and understand and ask questions of anybody in the OT cybersecurity community. I haven't met anybody in the OT community that would not either one, answer your question to the best of their ability, or two, put you in contact with somebody who can help answer your question. I mean, even me myself, I answer LinkedIn messages, I swear, every night for like 20, 30 minutes.
Good. I think that's a really valuable point to make because I speak to a lot of people and they have a LinkedIn account maybe, but they, especially since the COVID thing, since the whole physical networking wasn't as much of a thing anymore, I think people have become a lot more open to doing exactly what you just said there, answering, helping, and pointing in the right direction. I always encourage that. I think that's there's a massive amount of knowledge to be shared just from that simple one-liner message. You can connect with people. It's really easy to do. And just out of interest, but where do you go for your sort of knowledge, if you like?
My knowledge kind of branches out. So I'm not saying I'm a end all be all. I know everything about OT cybersecurity.
I am the font of knowledge.
Yeah, I'm the wealth of knowledge. No. There's many people out there that know way more than I do. But just like how cybersecurity is a makeup of three different pillars within IT, you have your system administration, you have your programming, and your networking. It's the same thing with OT cybersecurity. There's multiple facets that make up OT cybersecurity, and you have to know either a little bit in some of them or a lot of it in all of them. But what I like to do is focus on bleeding edge of what I think is going to be introduced into the OT environment. So after Dragos, I went to AWS security because I had a feeling that somehow, some way, cloud is going to be introduced into OT. And not just that, but machine learning and AI. And then look what happened at the beginning of this year, ChatGPT, or end of last year, maybe ChatGPT, something along the lines of that.
It's all of them, but yes, it was definitely fairly recently.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was the end of last year, but OpenAI came out with ChatGPT, and all of a sudden, wow, we have so much more we need to work with, identify. So that's what I like to focus on. So right now, I'm trying to focus on AI, machine learning, how it can either benefit OT cybersecurity or how to identify the threats that utilize those types of technologies and how to best defend against that.
Indeed, indeed. So with the AI and ML topic, it's on everybody's lips at the moment, like you say. And like you say, when GPT came out, it was almost like a flip overnight and it went crazy. So is that maybe a way to help address some of the skill shortage you talked about earlier with people coming through? Will that sort of help at all, or will that just give AI to the bad guys as well? So now we're at an even state again.
Well, we weren't at an even state before. We have to notice that and understand that cybersecurity, both in IT and OT, is a cat and mouse game. We're always trying to, as defenders, catch up and be on the bleeding edge and understand everything. But unfortunately, sometimes vendors take a little bit of time to try to release these new techniques, try to release a detection for that technique or an indicator of compromise. So we're responding and very reactive to a lot of threats out there. What I think AI can do, to be more specific, large language models, or generative AI, is utilizing it as a way to compensate for maybe things you're unaware of or don't understand. So maybe utilizing, and I'm not saying utilize ChatGPT and put your organization's data in there, but I'm saying maybe utilize ChatGPT and ask it questions of maybe the MITRE ATT&CK for ICS framework and try to understand that, or the ICS cyber kill chain and try to understand that and really build that knowledge. And obviously you have to double check because it's a machine. So we don't understand, we don't trust everything on the internet. So we shouldn't trust ChatGPT
True,
just giving me information. Obviously, ask somebody if you're like, that doesn't seem right, to understand the whole picture. But I find that AI will help augment our productivity in cybersecurity, not just, your admins and executives help build reports and such, but actually us boots on the ground needing to defend these networks, they will help us in productivity some sort of way.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so. And going forward, we've jumped around on the podcast so far, and thank you for fielding all the questions I've thrown over.
Yeah, no worries.
But going forward, AI and ML aside, anything you're looking forward to maybe over the next year or so?
With the release of Gemini from Google that just happened, I had an answer for this, and it was NVIDIA. With the release of Gemini and really looking at Google's answer to OpenAI's ChatGPT or GPT-4 or 4 Turbo, I think AI is going to advance a lot more before we see the entirety of its benefits through adoption. So we know that there's a lot of companies, actually almost all companies out there are probably getting asked by their board of directors, what's your AI strategy, right? And some people are like, well, my AI strategy is to use ChatGPT. And that's not always the answer. So as large language models themselves become smaller and smaller and easier to utilize on, let's say, consumer hardware like your laptop or your phone, right? We're also going to see that in cybersecurity products and actually all our products out there that we utilize. I mean, as is, like Salesforce has their own machine learning AI type models available to you. HubSpot themselves have an AI that helps you field, I think, field emails or create emails and help you with tasks and such, and also helps create like marketing content for you. So, you're looking at technology that can easily 2x your output, if not 10x. And me, as somebody who likes to code on the side sometimes, and you always hear about the 10x engineer, if this technology can make me a 10x engineer, that would be awesome.
Yeah, no, let's hope so. Let's hope so. But I know what you mean. It's every product, tool, or company out there. It's odd now if they don't have an AI element to what they do. I had a tool the other day and I thought, does this need AI? But apparently it does. So who knows? It must be working
Yeah.
somewhere.
And we need to be also mindful of these companies that talk about their AI and their technologies, because there's a big difference between utilizing like a large language model for generative AI and utilizing a machine learning model to help predict certain things on behalf. So I think us as consumers and business professionals, we need to start understanding that as well. It's really easy to intermingle them, as you know, you see it on like job postings, ML AI engineer, right? You're like, oh, they're the same. They're not the same.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, I think that's a whole different podcast in itself around
Yep. Yeah. Let's do that podcast later on.
educating that. And then ultimately, we had a demo once for a tool that was it was down as AI, but all it was like an automation type piece. But we won't go into that
We
now.
won't go into that now. Yeah.
But Harry, it's been great talking to you. Thank you so much for taking the time here. I know you're a busy guy. I took a lot of value from that. Hopefully, the listeners did too. And we'll chuck a link to. See LinkedIn and everything below, so people know where to find you if they do want to reach out for networking and help and things like that. But thank you again, and we'll speak soon.
All right. Thanks for having me. Have a good one.